don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Over the last 7 weeks, we've had poets and presidents on the show. We've had actors and authors. And today, we have our first international pop star of the season. One of the biggest and best artists in the UK right now. She's just about to embark on a sold-out European tour. Rebecca Lucy Taylor, better known as Self-Esteem, is giving her first ever interview on Irish radio. And let me tell you, you're in for a treat. Owen Murphy here on Second Captain Saturday. How you doing, buddy?
All right, Owen. What's the crack?
Rebecca spent over a decade as part of the indie group Slow Club before starting out life again as a solo act, Self-Esteem, just over 5 years ago. Her second album, Prioritized Pleasure, came out in 2021. And that catapulted her just to a level of critical acclaim and popularity beyond anything she'd ever experienced before by a distance. The Guardian picked it as her album of the year. The track I Do This All The Time was picked as the best song of the year. She was nominated for a Brit Award and for the prestigious Mercury Prize as well. Her latest album, A Complicated Woman, was released earlier this year and I think could well be her best yet. I think probably the biggest thing about her, Murph, is the music, the live performance, but also the emotional connection she has formed with her fans over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's through the brilliance and just the honesty of her music. You know, she is a woman in her 30s speaking to a lot of people, mostly women, in their 30s. I saw it put really well in one review, saying the songs reflect experiences so many women rarely articulate to other people, to each other, even to themselves. And that's really, really true. On the other hand, a fan said in a New York Times profile, they're banging tunes, aren't they? That always helps. Like, the fan is also not wrong. For all of that emotional honesty, there are a lot of bangers in the back catalogue as well.
Well, listen, you need that. She's an electric live performer. Her live shows, they look weird and brilliant and so much fun. She's acted on the West End. She's currently working on a book that's due out soon. Self-Esteem gets things done. Let's just say that. And I know you're going to be impressed, Murph, by her connection to England's success at the Women's Euros during the summer. So 2 out of every 3 people watching television in the UK on the 27th of July were tuned in to see the Lionesses beat Spain to become back-to-back European champions. The opening montage that night featured the words and music of Self-Esteem, which it also featured earlier in the tournament. And she's a big Sheffield Wednesday fan, so she has strong sporting credentials. This is a big, big contender we've got here today. Murph, please remind us of the rules of the show and how the leaderboard is looking at the start of play.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Yeah, so you know the drill by now. We have a guest each week, and each week I must assess them using the following 3 criteria. I will closely analyse their sporting achievements. I will assign to them a sports hair that I feel most closely resembles them. And then, having considered their all-time sporting highlight, I will give them a score out of 100. Micheál D. O'Higgins still leads on 90 points, and it's intimidating. Alvi Carraher took her best shot last week and came up with 87 points.
Respectable.
I got some criticism. Very respectable, Owen. I got some criticism online over that. 2-time national athletics champion versus esteemed supporter of Galway United, etc., etc. But I stand over my scores. As for today, Self-Esteem is walking in some esteemed musical footsteps. The Mary Wallopers were, are, and will always be terrible at sport. Annie Mack got 78 points for refusing to let in shots from her under-10 soccer charges. Mowgli Bop got 79 points for being good enough at hurling to lace up the boots with Sean O'Gohalpine. Good scores, Owen, but not great scores. If Self-Esteem has anything about her, she could well charge past them all and into the 80s. We shall see over the coming hour.
You can get in touch with us by emailing editor@secondcaptains.com. We're at Second Captains on Instagram. Cannot wait to meet Self-Esteem. But first, here's If Not Now, It's Soon.
Everything you are, everything you see, everyone got used to who you pretend to be. What if you're not scared? What if you're just here? Yeah. And all the pages turn.
That was If Not Now, It's Soon, performed by the amazing Self-Esteem, aka Rebecca Lucy Taylor, who also blew the crowd away at Electric Picnic last weekend. Rebecca, welcome to Second Captain Saturday. Thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks for having me.
That's great to have you on. That song featured heavily in the BBC's coverage of England's victory at the Women's Euros this summer. I think that was something that meant a lot to you.
Yes, it really did. I write songs in loads of different ways, and one of the ways is I decide, like, I want to write a song that will get used on XYZ kind of thing. And I love montage music. Mm-hmm. Goal montages, I just love them. And I've known them all my life. Do you know what I mean? Like, my family, all they do is watch football. And the only way to kind of see where I would fit in there would be to make the music for the for the montages. And then I just remember 2012 and just that Elbow song that was just everywhere. And I love that Elbow song so much. So long story long, I stood there in the studio and said, I want to write something that will get used at the Olympics or for some resounding success. And my sort of like joke was that it would be obviously for when the women win the World Cup or the Euros. And then it did get used. And I was, because it was so hot in the UK. And so I was completely butt naked watching the match, like losing my mind. And I was stood up just like screaming at the win. And then it started. And I turned around to my partner. I was like, oh my God. And then they started filming me. And I was like, this is it. So there is a video of me dancing like a maniac, completely naked. But I'll use that when I need to. Financially.
Yes, indeed. So you obviously didn't know it was coming. This is the penalty shootout quarterfinals against Sweden. England came from 2-0 down, took it to penalties, won the shootout. And then all of a sudden, it just pops on. You didn't know it was on the way.
No idea. It was so funny and fun. And I've had, this album's not been a massive laugh. Like, I've had a bit of a difficult time with it. And I am like a grotty sort of person who really loves validation, and it made me really validated for a second where I was like, see, that's why I wrote songs like this. I said to no one at all in my mind, but yeah, it was lovely. And then just, it really means a lot to me. I mean, it means a lot to all of us, but like I do think about me as a little girl a lot, like in terms of therapy and things like that. I'm always trying to think, like, what, you know, you try and get back to that person, and if she'd have known you could be a footballer, she probably wouldn't have been a footballer, but like it would have been nice for her to think she could have been. And now I just get very excited by these like micro changes in like my lifetime in terms of feminism, and feminism is reducing it somewhat, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, like the final against Spain was the most watched TV event in the UK this year, and you narrated the opening montage. And there's a couple of like little lines from it that I think are really instructive to what you've just been talking about. The impossible made possible by this team. So what else could change was kind of a question that you pose. So obviously this team speaks to you in a way beyond just as a lover of football.
Yeah, it's not like I'm from the olden days, but like even I, ultimately, we sort of sold a bit of a dream that you could be whatever you want, but ultimately you can't. And you have to stay in your place and you have to stay well behaved and you won't, and the world won't like sort of eat you alive kind of thing. And I'm, you know, I have these conversations where I'm like, we're nowhere further ahead than we think we are. And, you know, there's still so much to do and we're going back in time. And I get so negative. And then these little moments of, where I get slapped around the face with a, hang on a minute, things do shift. It's not just football, but this, it is huge for it to be cared about, to be funded, for it to be like, there's a whole infrastructure now. It's not just the playing, like jobs in football are now not just for men. And that's a change.
You said you wanted the album to have big anthems in it, you know, and I just think it's so cool for you to be able to say, I want this song to feature in a montage of amazing goals scored, hopefully by a team that I myself support. Like, to say something as specific as that, and for you to then have that dream become a reality without you even knowing it was about to happen, there's something so deadly about that.
Yeah, it's so good. And also, yeah, in music, I don't want to sit here and sort of say how broken the industry is, but, you know, it's a very different industry to what even I started in. And you have to take your wins where you can get it, because it's so small. The idea of success is so small now, and it's, you know, global pop star or you've not done it. And that's what's, you know, tough. And you always, to find these little wins, these deadly moments that feel, validating and It's great. And then you just, you know, on to the next one.
It's obviously been a big year for you with the release of the new album. Your Glastonbury performance looked and sounded amazing. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. It was a lot of pressure. My Glastonbury a couple of years before that was sort of... I've kind of been suffering from, like, my career was like didn't really get anywhere, very small. Then suddenly everyone seemed to be interested in me and all these moments were huge. And then this is the first album since all of that. So I was like, no amount of, like, my rational self knows that this was never going to be just really fun and easy. This is always going to be like, you know, this is human nature for everyone to be like, oh, is she any good though, actually? So it was fun, apart from, like, you know, that searing fear. But that's been threaded through this whole album campaign.
Is that for live performances as well, though? Is that more about how the album is going to be perceived, or when you're about to go on stage? If you just take us into, you know, backstage at Glastonbury, you're 10 minutes till you're going on stage. Are you feeling fearful, or are you feeling really confident? Like, this is what I'm great at. I'm going to nail this.
Mostly, yeah. Like, I love playing live, and I've really developed this show. My shows all through the years have always been like, you just get so used to being like first on or on before the headliner or whatever. And I've always made my live shows be something that you can't, whether you're enjoying it or not, you have to look at it. I always have a confidence in that. But yeah, Glastonbury, it was this self-imposed pressure for it to, like, live up to last time. And, you know, no good art comes from that mindset. So I had to just, like, force, and I pushed through, and I'm so proud of this show and how sort of mad it is. And we're about to tour it. Like,
yeah.
And I did it in the theater for a week and then didn't really do it again until then, you know? So I've not got my sort of sea legs with it as a show even yet. So Glastonbury was like, there was pressure in general. There was pressure because it's Glastonbury, and there was pressure because I still am a bit like, not, it's not totally in my body yet. But we played this weekend just gone at Electric Picnic, and it really sort of settled a bit in me, and I'm really buzzing to get it on tour.
You were rocking the Sheffield Wednesday tracksuit at Glastonbury, which you often wear Wednesday gear on stage. Why, aside from the fact that you support them, why do you wear the Sheffield Wednesday gear so much?
It's very difficult to have any sort of patriotism at all coming from England. Like, it's deeply embarrassing. And and that, like, idea of a sense of self and a pride in your roots. I'm so proud that I'm here in the music industry and I'm not from a background that meant that was easy and stuff like that. And also there's this need to belong somewhere that I'm always, and because you can't, it's just some sort of patriotism in a small way, in a sort of harmless way, in a way that doesn't, I don't think that also my dad was from Hillsborough. My great granddad played for Sheffield Wednesday. Like,
oh, right.
It's also like a family sweet childhood thing as well. It's like, it's all connected, and it's just a way to say I didn't go to the Brit school, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's also funny because we are, like, such a tragic football team.
Well, I mean, you know, I was on the Owls Talk, Sheffield Wednesday fan. Barely a day goes by where I'm not on it.
You're
to
always
be
on that. But, it's a problem at this point.
I did see a comment on there after Glastonbury. I think she's ace, and pray she becomes successful enough to be able to buy us.
I know. I agree. I really do agree. It's on the vision board.
Wow. You manifested the montage, and now you're manifesting buying Sheffield, because they're in a little bit of a financial hole at the moment. It's not going amazingly well on the field, but, you know, the hope is on the horizon.
Surely.
In the form of self-esteem.
I'd love that. That would be the perfect ending to all this.
You mentioned how you toiled for a long time in the industry for years and years before becoming a big success. I don't even know if that's the right way to phrase it. Before fame, I guess, came your way with your second solo album, Prioritize Pleasure. Was there a specific moment around that album when you realized that things had changed for you? You'd hit the big time?
I mean, yeah. The big time, I've hit a time. But it felt... Steve Lamacq played one of the songs off it, like, twice in the same show. And it was back when, you know, I used to sit and we'd have a bottle of bubbles and wait for my song to be played. And it was just after the pandemic. And when he played that twice, I thought, oh, that there's no way like that's not going to mean something. And I have like, I've made music since I was 18. I've been on the road since I was 18. And, you know, you watch other artists just fly past you. And I am susceptible to sort of thinking, why not me? You know, and I, what you learn is it's, everything happens when it's meant to, and it's all productive. Success is such a, I could do a whole podcast arguing about what that means, but it was just such a relief to be able, I mean, look, I do so many things. There's so many things in my brain, and I'm so glad that now it's very slightly easier to get them out, and more people would like to hear them and or read them or whatever. And I'm just so glad, because I was about to quit, you know.
Really?
Which,
yeah.
You know, I was going to retrain. I was going to train to be like a Keep Fit instructor and try and start like a sort of indie gym. Like a cool gym with cool music.
Sorry.
And cool aerobics and stuff. I do that.
Wait, like Jane Fonda with bangers.
Yeah, literally. And I was like, I would, because in the pandemic, I worked out every day on Instagram, and you know, so like a few hundred people would join me, and it's still about 35 people by the end of that whole bloody lockdown. Yeah. Second lockdown was still doing it with me, and I loved curating the music. I love moving my body, and I still feel it's so gatekept by, like, you know, fitness is such a frightening place for so many people. And so I've still got a go, pretty much of a good goer of a business idea for that.
No one else steal that idea now.
Oh, that is self-esteem's everyone idea. Steals my ideas. Everyone. But hey, another thing to make my peace with and be a Zen master about. It's fine.
Fair. How have you found the fame that has come your way then in the last few years?
I don't notice it. Sometimes like 35-year-old girls crying if they see me in the street and say thank you. But apart from that, I don't feel famous. I feel just the best thing is like what I said. It's like I can have an idea, and then instead of it being like banging down doors, I can kind of like have a coffee with someone that might help me realize it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So when you're talking about finding things difficult, you've alluded to that a few times already. And you've said in the past that you felt miserable after you achieved stardom with the second album, despite the fact that, this is a quote of yours, everything I ever wanted was offered to me, but fame clearly isn't what you wanted.
No, God, no. I've known for a while it's not that I want. It's the sort of continuation of my creativity, and that just literally means like budget and, you know, people that will want it, and the music industry for me, you know, I don't stream high numbers at all, and I don't have like loads of followers, but then I sell loads of tickets, so I just have a daily I'm sort of feel like it's not gone well enough or whatever, and you're just at the bottom of the next hill all the time, you know. And there's always, especially with women, there's always women that like can't wait to compare you to, and when it's bad, that those feelings get in, you know. And but like enlightened Zen me knows that's the direct enemy of true art. But like the insecure millennial woman in me sometimes goes, well, why am I not? Why haven't I got that? And then, but I know to shut her up and just keep on making. So that's the only bit I find hard. The like constant comparison and like the idea you should be bigger than you are.
Yeah. I mean, I would look at much of kind of 21st century fame and say that's a really weird space to inhabit, you know? And I mean, I don't know, like recognition and the love of, you know, hordes and hordes of people. As you say, like this is a completely sold out UK and Ireland tour, you know, like that's not, you know, you're not messing around. That's an amazing thing. And, you know, maybe the idea of like global pop superstardom, as you said earlier on, like not much of that seems all that fun to me, you know?
No. I think I've been struggling with, like, I was in a band for years, and then I was like, I had all these ideas, and the clearest way to sort of communicate that to anybody who I needed help with was, I want to be a massive, massive artist. And so and when I was in the band, no, we never spoke like that. It was just like, whatever, man, we're just going to do whatever. Like, and I was got very ambitious. I was very clear, and, you know, all of it paid off and got us here. And now you sort of sit on the edge of going like, well, I'd have to do all this again and then some relentlessly for probably another, you know, 5-10 years to become some sort of global boxer. And then that existential shit has got in where I'm like, well, why do I, yeah, exactly what you said. I don't want that. But when you've had one goal your whole life, it's a bit sort of sticky whilst I reimagine what that goal is. And that goal is to do different projects as I want to do them, get really good at other things, change, you know, how people see the world a bit if they want that, and keep healing and keep growing through the different disciplines I'm interested in. I literally have that, so I should be fine.
Yeah.
And just shut up.
And a lot of your fads are people, often women, who've gone through some of the stuff you've gone through. They might be of a similar age. They've lived a life. And again, looking at it from the outside, that's such a different dynamic to a pop star who might be singing to teenagers, you know, who, you know, spend all the money in, you know, popular music, and that's absolutely fine. But that must be a lovely feeling as well, as you say, to have 35-year-old women just walking up and crying to you and showing you their tattoos of lyrics of yours and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it will never get old, and it never, I say this a lot, but that it's not like I set out to like help people. I make this music because it helps me. Like, I'm not that kind, but then to find it helps people or sort of moves people in the way that it does, and is really what it has become completely about. And that exchange of energy as well is so good for me, because I spent a decade feeling very on the outside of it all, and self-esteem is so not. So much of music or bands or things like that is sort of like, you don't get it, you're not included, you're going to come and like worship this. And I struggled in that dynamic, and self-esteem is very like, you're here with us, we're all in this together. And that makes me feel less alone as well. And I can't believe people respond to it like they do. And I'm sort of sad that everyone's as depressed as I am.
Well, I can see though why there's a pressure there as well. You know, you have this phenomenal success with your previous album. You've got this incredible connection that you're talking about there with your fans. But you do need to find new ways to maintain that connection. You can't just say what you've said on previous albums. I mean, I think everyone could empathize with the sort of pressure of that.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, you are on repeat. But then I recently figured out, I think what I'm doing, I didn't realize it's what I was doing, but it's sort of diarizing. Like, my first solo album was called Compliments Please, and at that time in my life, you can hear where I'm at, you can hear where I'm looking for peace and love and solidarity, and then you hear me have the, you know, ding ding, I know now I've got to give that to myself, prioritize pleasure, and then like, and Complicated Woman was like, oh, hang on, it's not as simple as that. And I honestly think I'm sat here going like, well, when an artist, I think about the world in this way, and I think I'm thinking about it like a hell of a lot of people do. I'm just having the foresight to like write it down or put it to music. Like, and I think now artistically that's interesting. So like, if I did have a baby, what would that album sound like? If I did have my roof done, more likely than we have, right? If I renovated and got, you know, an upstairs, what would that sound like? Or, you know, my dementia album, like, let's see. It's given me a purpose and makes me understand it. And then like, if you can make it like bangers and like fun and exciting and something worth coming to see live, then, you know, job security, it's fine.
We're so happy to be joined by Rebecca Lucy Taylor today for her first ever interview on Irish radio. She's better known, of course, as Self-Esteem, and she has rewritten what it means to be a pop star. But does that extend to also being good at sport? It actually does. Find out how after this. It's just another new mountain to climb, but I know that at the top is where the next hill starts. Self-Esteem, aka Rebecca Lucy Taylor, is with us on Second Captain Saturday this afternoon. That's the Deep Blue OK from her latest album, A Complicated Woman, which is phenomenal, by the way, Rebecca. We absolutely love it.
You.
How have you found the reaction to it generally?
Really mixed.
Really?
Yeah. It got pretty bad reviews. It got some nice ones, but it got some real shockers. And also, everyone was like, everyone was kind about Prioritize Pleasure. Like, I never, apart from like incels, I never got any shit. And then, so it was just the first time someone's been a bit like, don't like this or don't like that. So that was always going to be a shocker. But it's also like, I laugh because it's funny, isn't it? Like, what am I even doing? Once it's like, when people are sort of negative, I'm like, it's pretty quickly hilarious because you can't really have a big problem with that because it's just songs, isn't it?
But I presume does it free you up somewhat as well, creatively, to know that you're not going to be able to please everybody. You are going to get negative reviews.
Yeah,
so who cares? We all would like to think we can not care what other people think.
Be the bigger person.
I think as a human being, that's almost impossible, to be honest. But is there an element of that, okay, forget about those guys. They're not going to like whatever I do anyway, so let's just do it my way.
Absolutely. And I think we'll look back on this time in my life and go like, it was where I became the sort of artist that I'm now going to be going forward. Before, it was just like, when will this happen? When will it happen? I want it. And this is like what happens after you get it, right? So, and then I've had people say beautiful things about the album. And honestly, the next Sunday I go on tour, and I think 3 weeks of actually playing it to people will really help. Because it's a different ball game to, you know, the sort of Taylor Swift of it all. Like, if you emancipate yourself from trying to have a hit or go get bigger or get younger fans or all that kind of thing, it's not about it being liked or critically acclaimed or big. It's just about the art, and it can all carry on, and then there'll be more of it, and then there'll be more of it, and you can like bits of it and not the other, you know. To this point, this fear I have of it going away, I think I can like chill out on that for a bit, and
yeah,
that's a comfort.
Yeah. Well, some of the live stuff, the Jules Holland performance, when you're on with all these other singers and dancers and you go from the Handmaid's Tale setup into the football kits, it looks like you're genuinely cracking up laughing. I don't know how much of that is performative and how much you're just in the moment enjoying this sort of collegiate mad show you're putting on.
I laugh, it's definitely not put on. Like, especially that Jules Holland performance, because I had this idea that we'd walk around and we'd take off the costumes and then we'd all come like into the camera at the end, and me and the director of Jules Holland, who's amazing, done it. Like, you have 15, 20 minutes to plan that. And I was, and no one ever wants you to do that. They want you to just stay still and do the bloody thing because it's really hard. And she had been such a legend, and we had one chance to get it, and I'm laughing my head off. So I'm like, the poor cameraman in this place, like, hate to see self-esteem come in. I've always had a laugh at self-esteem on stage, because again, it's the same thing I said earlier, like, you can't take everything that seriously, because I'm not doing brain surgery, do you know what I mean? Like, when I start to be like really angry about something, I'm like, come on.
Well, the aim of this show is to rank your sporting achievements, Rebecca, and to try to get you listen, we want to get you to the top of our leaderboard here. Top spot is currently held by the Irish president. So listen, it's a tall order. politically, we might not be able to put you right there at number one, but we will also, we'll dock points for any false modesty. So don't hold back. We hear you were a pretty decent cricketer.
I was. Now, here we go. It wasn't hard to be thought of as a decent cricketer if you were from a little village in Rotherham and you were a girl. So my law is that I was very promising and good. My dad's law is the same. He thinks good. I was very good.
But so that's unbiased opinion, though you've got a second source on this. Yeah. You know, this is good journalism.
That's true. Exactly. But I will say that if you pitted me against the rest of the country, maybe at that time, I wasn't that amazing. I don't know if I'd have made the England team. But I got to South Yorkshire and then quit as soon as they changed the ball they changed it from a wind ball to a cricket ball. And when you hit like 13, I think. And then I was like, bleep this.
But those cricket balls are rock hard, to be fair. They'd be off putting to a lot of people.
As the proper leather cork guy careered towards my face, and I thought, I'm not, and I quit. I couldn't bear it. As soon as it was that ball. And so I'm really devastated. My dad, but my dad's interested in sport and music. So thank God I am made up for it elsewhere. But
no, I mean, this is, you're representing Yorkshire. Like, So, and Yorkshire is a hotbed of cricket. So, I mean, you know, this is not one of your, you know, rinky dink counties.
I did
You know, we're talking
your Lancashires.
Yeah.
It was like South Yorkshire under 14s girls or something. It wasn't. I don't want to big it up and then end up in some sort of charity cricket match and with egg on my face. But I only ever bring it up because it's sort of funny and sexy to say on dates, to be honest. Like, I think it's like everyone, and now I'm like on a bloody podcast talking about my cricket. But anyway, I was a good bowler. I was a good fast bowler. And then I was starting to like train to spin, and then I quit. And, you know, the cricket's never been the same in South Yorkshire since, I imagine.
No, they still talk about you.
So you were primarily a bowler as opposed to a batter.
Yeah, I'm a terrible batter.
Well, listen, you know, if you're good enough with ball in hand, batting should be a joke.
Exactly. My dad was a pretty amazing fast bowler.
Was he?
But then he did his knee, and then the rest is history. But my life was cricket. Like, that's all we did all weekend, every weekend.
Was it? Yeah. What did you... Mm. Have you gone back to playing cricket at all as self-esteem?
No. I every time I sort of need to, I kind of haven't had any time to do this in the last few years, but like, all I did as a kid was like dancing classes, cricket, pottery class. I just did stuff all the time. I never just did nothing. And I love activities. If I had more time, I love learning things that you don't need to turn into a career, even though I even tried to turn cricket into one. Mm-hmm. But my dream is to like have a sort of a life where I'm part of a ladies cricket team again. But
So you will own Sheffield Wednesday, and then in your downtime you'll play a little bit of
cricket. Yeah.
All right, so you've represented your county of cricket, you teamed up with the BBC at a major tournament, as we discussed, but neither of these, I'm told, are your all-time sporting highlights. So what are you going for instead?
I just remember, like, I played everything and anything regardless of any skill level. So I remember going to a tennis tournament, like in school, I mean, like shipped out to do this tennis tournament because no one else wanted to. And then I truly stood on a court and lost like 15 times in a day. And I honestly I wanted to do anything and everything. I was such a like pick me kind of full of, I don't know why, but I still kind of am. But we did have this netball team that really went from like year seven to end of school, sixth form. And it was about the same girls. It was all of us did the same thing. And we truly never won, ever. But we turned up regardless. And I was a scrappy centre captain. And we trained. I don't remember ever feeling like it wouldn't happen one day for us. And then there was this one day, there was this team, Wickersley. Every other school's team seemed amazing, but they were particularly amazing and sort of felt quite threatening and violent. And there was just this one time we won this one netball match, and we screamed, there were tears. We were, and this was just like a run-of-the-mill weekly netball match. And the girls from Wickersley, I remember them being like, calm down, it's just netball. And I was like, but it means so much more than netball to every single woman on this pitch. And that when asked what my greatest sporting achievement is, I remember it so vividly. And then we immediately went back to losing. No hyperbole, I honestly think we were once in 7 years of playing matches weekly.
Wow. I mean, is there a life lesson we can take from this netball experience?
Well, I love the fact you continued to have self-belief despite all the knocks. You felt you were always going to get this victory. That's pretty strong stuff.
Ain't that I'm making a career out of now, saying over and over. that's my main point. And also, like, it's something about just the sisterhood and the camaraderie and the it wasn't the destination, it was the journey. And also, look, I grew up. My first Wednesday match, I think we won like 7-0. I'd have to check this. And it was against, I can't remember. Let me find out. But we won 7-0. And I was like, football's great. This is really fun. And then like, obviously, I've then gone on to have my lifetime of supporting Sheffield Wednesday and realising that football does, it's, you know, winning has never been at the forefront of my mind in terms of team sports. Maybe that's why I'm obsessed with winning, just personally.
You've had so little of it from your sports team.
Yeah.
Right, Murph, this is good stuff. A reminder of the scores this season. President Higgins leads on 90 points. Spider Stacey of the Pogues is dead last with a weak 74 points. That's the kind of spread we're talking about here. What about today's contestant? Could you please now rank this sporting life of Rebecca Lucy Taylor, a.k.a. self-esteem?
You don't understand. I could have had class.
We don't have stars in this game, Mrs. Weaver.
What do you have, then?
People like me.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Well, Rebecca, this part of the show is never easy. It's not easy when it's the President of Ireland. It's not easy when it's some of Ireland's greatest ever writers and actors. And it's certainly not easy when the gulf in coolness is as wide as the chasm that currently separates you and I. But nevertheless, this proud owner of a 2019 Renault Captur must now assess your sporting abilities, pick a sports person that I feel most closely resembles you and your sporting achievements, and then, having considered your all-time sporting highlight, give you points out of 100 to see if you will be crowned our greatest non-sports person sports person of 2025. You've quite frankly no right to have achieved as much as you have in sport and still make your living as a musician. You've done it all. The montage heroics for the Euros this year, a devastating fast bowler, a netball queen. Your list of achievements are lengthy. Your Sheffield Wednesday themed onstage stylings remind me intensely of Irish football's own Style Council executive member, John Sheridan, who strode around the Sheffield Wednesday midfield for years in the 1990s, looking like the dauntingly gauche male star of a Jean-Luc Godard movie. Got the winner in the League Cup final in 1991. I don't need to tell you that, Rebecca, of course. Points will have to be deducted for giving up on cricket once you had to face a Duke's ball, which, we, as we all know, starts to swing after 10 overs and wears down quicker than the Kookaburra ball, which will be in use for the upcoming Ashes series. And I don't need to tell you that, Owen.
No, of course, I know all about that.
So it's been a real thrill talking music with you today. Your sporting game is top tier. Listen, it's good enough for 83 points. Good enough for joint third place, in fact, this season. So basically, England men's team, not England women's team, basically. So
I
the
love
mighty
it.
Self-esteem. The mighty self-esteem. This has been your sporting life.
You look happy with that, Rebecca?
I'm
joint
thrilled.
Top, joint third.
Third? That's perfect.
Yeah.
Joint third. Let's not go over the top here.
I think you're being too kind, but I'll take it.
Listen, you've been so good with your time today. We really appreciate it. A round of applause, please.
I've loved
for the
it.
Brilliant Rebecca Lucy Taylor.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you both. It's been really nice and funny. We're still texting then, but I'm certainly not your friend. I don't know where this began, but I know where it ends. With some wizardry, I ignored the warnings, but from that I'm learning. Wizardry from the album Prioritize Pleasure from today's guest, Self-Esteem. Well, it's effing wizardry to give it its full title. We're obviously not allowed to play the uncensored
version. All right, yeah.
That also goes for one of her new songs, 69, Murph. I know you're pushing hard for that, but it's not even 2 p.m. on a Saturday. Come on, cop on.
Yeah.
Family radio.
2 a.m. on a Saturday is still probably not all that likely, let's be honest.
Yeah. If you're just discovering Self-Esteem for the first time today, the good news is that she's playing Dublin as part of her upcoming tour. The bad news is that gig at the Olympia on Wednesday, September 24th, is long since sold out.
Oh, yeah.
But listen, we posted a link to her performing Wizardry Uncensored at Glastonbury on Instagram at Second Captains. And it's very, very good. So go have a look at that if you have a chance. What a brilliant guest. That was just a real treat. I forgot to ask Self-Esteem if she's available to provide the music to all the goal montages we'll need after the Republic of Ireland put a heavy beating on Hungary tonight. This is the opening game of our World Cup qualifying campaign. Hungary, yeah, sure, they have Dominic Szoboszlai, one of the best players in the Premier League. But we have a vague hope that better times are just around the corner for Irish football. I don't know if you've noticed, Murph, the noise coming out of the Ireland camp in the last few days is bordering on bullish, I would say. Hamer says
there's
a new energy around the team. It is, really. He says there's more self-belief now among a young squad. It looks like they're taller today than when I came a year ago. That, for me, is what has been most impressive.
That's a really, really strong sign. I like what that says about us.
Josh Cullen started out 5'8" and now he's 6'2". It's extraordinary stuff going on with this Irish team. One of his assistants, Paddy McCarthy, says this team is on the cusp of something special. My expectation is we're going to be in America next year. So they're certainly talking this one up.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, why not, Owen? We've been in the doldrums for long enough. This is the best time of all. We haven't played a game yet. You know, as of right now, we're joint top of our World Cup group. So long may that continue.
I think I predicted a draw on the podcast. I'm going to have to upgrade that. I'll go for a win now. And that means at least I get to look correct on one of the two predictions. Unless, of course,
yeah,
there is a third result that could happen.
Well, I said 2-1 during the week. Nothing has changed since then. As what are we now? 5 hours before kickoff. That sounds about right.
I'm excited to sell out. I think we're both going to be there. Are we meeting up beforehand, or are we just leaving?
No, we're probably fine, on, aren't we?
We had a busy week, you know, weekends again. I don't think we need to spend our Saturday nights hanging out. I'll chat to you again on Monday. Next week, by the way, is our final show of the season, incredibly. Can our final guest pip President Higgins to the title? Sorry for the spoiler, but absolutely not, let's face it. That's not going to happen.
Unlikely.
Our next guest is a brilliant one, though. Starred in one of the biggest international movies of the last 25 years and now lives here in Ireland. That's your tease. Find out who it is on next week's show.
Forward selling, I love it.
Leave them wanting more, you know. We're back same time next Saturday. We're also available in podcast form Monday to Friday, wherever you get your pods. Have a look at secondcaptains.com to hear the brilliant international podcast series, Steak Knife. This is a Second Captains production for RTE, produced by Killian Down. Mark Horgan is a series producer for Second Captains. Thanks to Johnny Lanigan in RTE, who is a self-esteem super fan. So this episode is especially for Jan today. Thanks so much for listening. We'll chat to you next week.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.